the budgets were always so high for a couple of, you know, t-shirts and maybe a pair of like, you know, boxer shorts, right? It's a girl brushing her teeth and she's got three wardrobe changes. And at the end of this shoot day, we were left with just so much clothing that would go to waste. And that was on a very sort of small scale. And then you look at film or you look at these commercials and there's just a ton of waste because there's such a short lifespan for everything. And what I was hoping to do as a costume designer stylist was figure out a way that the productions could all work together.
You're listening to Art of the App. I'm your host, Michelle Cherian. Each episode, you'll get creative inspiration from mission-driven startup founders, investors, and other experts disrupting the status quo. Hear about the thought processes and values that help guide them from early ideas to the standout products and brands that people love. Looking to learn from others creating a massive impact in the world? Welcome to Art of the App. Welcome, everyone. In today's episode, I talk to Haley Lieberman. Haley is the founder and CEO of Shop Tomorrows, a marketplace for modern parents to trade up goods between neighborhoods, networks, and beyond. Before founding Shop Tomorrows, Haley was a stylist for stage, screen, and print for the likes of New York Fashion Week, the Metropolitan Opera, and commercials for Pepsi Cola and Johnson & Johnson. After a decade of working on large-scale operas, films, and commercials, she became disturbed by the amount of textiles wasted in her industry and estimated that every year, she was contributing to nearly $1 million of clothing that had almost no life beyond its immediate use. And so, motivated to make a difference, she went on to research and teach fashion and history and sustainability in universities throughout the Northeast. And then when her twins were born, she was faced with the problem of textile waste in her own home and set out on a mission to build what is now Shop Tomorrows, the first modern marketplace for parents to exchange curated goods through social networks. In this episode, Haley and I talk all things sustainable fashion. Here's Haley.
Haley, I know you were a costume designer and stylist for many years before starting your business. And I read that you worked with Madonna, who is total icon for me. And one of those people that I remember even as a kid, just being like, oh my gosh, this is just amazing seeing her on TV and all the sets. And yeah, what she was wearing was just so inspiring. I'd love to hear what your experience was like working with some of these people. I mean, especially Madonna, but you know, anyone else that you'd want to share about.
Happy to talk about that time in my life. Yes, before I started Shop Tomorrows, I was a costume designer and stylist for over a decade to celebrities, worked on New York Fashion Week and did a ton of operas, films, commercials. And working with Madonna was an absolute dream. I was part of the costume design team for the Sticky and Sweet tour when it came to New York. And I was responsible for helping the team source all of the buttons, fabrics, trim, basically help make everything that was being made to order. So it was a huge job, difficult and exciting. And one thing that I learned from that experience was that these icons like Madonna work so hard and are so involved in everything. And they don't just climb to the top, you know, because they become Insta famous overnight. It takes real work. When I was working with Madonna, I would put together swatches of the fabrics and the buttons for the suits. And she would want to approve every last button that was on a suit for a dancer. And that's when I saw just the type of like tenacity and grit and hard work that it really takes to be somebody like her.
It's kind of like you think, oh, well, they have so many people working for them that they're just going to handle like this one aspect of it. But yeah, seeing the dedication and the attention to detail is amazing. Thanks for sharing that. I love that, like behind the scenes. So while you were in that scene of being a stylist and in the fashion world, you were saying where, I think maybe it was the first time we were talking, that you estimated that you were responsible for a lot of clothing waste. And you were saying it came to nearly $1 million and that you kind of wanted to, you know, kind of make a change. And that's part of the reason that led you down the road that eventually led you to Shop Tomorrows. I would love to hear kind of like how Shop Tomorrows got started, what led you to that, and once you had that idea, how you acted on it.
As a costume designer and stylist, there was just so much clothing coming in to any production and going out at the end of the day that had a lifespan of sometimes all of 10 minutes on camera or all of a few weeks maybe on stage. And I think that when I started to go into the commercial world, when I was the lead costume designer, stylist, the words are kind of interchangeable, to be honest, in that industry, I was both the sort of creative visionary of it, if you will, and also head of department, so responsible for the budgets while liaisoning with creative directors from the agencies and with the client itself. And so I worked on commercials for Crest or Domino's, did a ton of stuff for ESPN, M&M's. And I remember it was really like, it was one of these shoots that we did for Procter & Gamble. And the budgets were always so high for a couple of, you know, t-shirts and maybe a pair of like, you know, boxer shorts, right? It's a girl brushing her teeth and she's got three wardrobe changes. And at the end of this shoot day, we were left with just so much clothing that would go to waste. And that was on a very sort of small scale. And then you look at film or you look at these commercials and there's just a ton of waste because there's such a short lifespan for everything. And what I was hoping to do as a costume designer stylist was figure out a way that the productions could all work together in perhaps, you know, sharing the clothes or having some sort of a repository that we could all pull from rather than just continuously buy thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of stuff and shop for it all in like 3 days. That was really difficult. It was very difficult to make any change happen in that space. I saw that right away.
Where would the stuff go after it was like used and you didn't need it anymore?
It depended on the type of a project, but that too was not really systematic. On a commercial, sometimes it went back to the client because technically the client paid for it. Other times it would go to the ad agency in case there were reshoots. And most of the time, or most of the clothes would kind of just come back with me if they had been worn. And a lot of the times we were asked not to donate. There were just sort of like issues with donating, or we couldn't give the clothes to the talent. I did a lot of pharma, and sometimes we were working with real people who would have benefited from having this wardrobe, who would have, you know, who were getting paid not a whole lot of money to show up and who would have loved some fresh new clothes. We couldn't give it to them either. So I ended up with a ton of stuff in my own house, stashed in boxes. And seeing that amount of just clothing pile up at the end of every day became really disturbing. And I would say that that's what inspired me to actually start studying and learning about fashion sustainability, textile sustainability way before it even became a buzzword. And so then I started teaching fashion and textile sustainability at universities, which is what ultimately led me to where I am now with Shop Tomorrows.
What did you learn from like when you were teaching it and researching and kind of like doing this as part of academia and kind of like having those conversations that led you to Shop Tomorrow?
Even though this was only in, you know, that I started teaching in 2014, 2015, was, you know, that's just 5-6 years ago. So much has changed since then. At the time, there was very little technology to take pre-existing garments and break them down to their fiber to then be reused in some way, reappropriated. That really wasn't in existence. So I was starting to learn about all these new technologies that were really on the forefront, but that nobody was using yet, compared to now where there are so many emerging companies in this space that break down or work with fibers and regenerative materials, which is very exciting. But I think that really the biggest eye-opener I had learned or I came to understand from just, I always read about business and consumer practices and consumer behavior. I mean, I've read like the business section since I was a kid, even though I certainly did not know that I was going to go into business or really had the sense that I would want to. And I started to see that in the 2000s, we were deep into fast fashion, right? And it was like, it was the recession. Everybody was just buying a ton of crap with this very much like a buy, wear, toss model. And I knew from reading and from always being very much a trend forecaster, not in the way of like, oh, like drop shoulder tops are going to be cool. Like I never cared about that, but like really seeing like the big, like the macro trends, I saw that the pendulum was going to have to swing to the other side because that's just the way that markets work. So what was going to come after this massive sort of spending frenzy in fast fashion and consumption was then pendulum is going to swing into resale, to sustainable fashion, into practicing models of conscious consumption. And that's why I started Shop Tomorrows. Shop Tomorrows was written down on a piece of paper. That idea first was written down in 2017, which is really pioneering, considering that we're only just starting to really live in secondhand, millennials and Gen Z, but mostly Gen Z. We're only really just starting to adopt this as a normative practice now in 2021.
It's really interesting. Like that time, 2014 was when I started a business, Atta, where I was making jewelry and scarves with artisans in Bali and Nepal. And it started really when I was at an art residency in Nepal. And then I came back to New York and, I had no knowledge really of fashion I like any woman does, you're like, okay, or men, it's like, if you're interested in fashion, a little bit of like what looks good on you, but I didn't really even know that many designers. And so I came back and wanted to start this business. And I got into this group of people that were doing, ethical, sustainable fashion at that same time in like 2014, 2015. And it was really new. And a lot of them had a similar background to you, were coming from fashion and were totally upset with what they were kind of participating in and contributing to and wanted to do it differently. It was really on the fringes then, but now you can see there's just consumers really are actually asking for this. They're asking their brands that they're really into, like, what are you doing? Like, what's your supply chain look like? All these things. And resale and reuse is just an amazing part of that too, because then you're not even actually going through that whole manufacturing process, which is pretty destructive. And also, you said that your family was also a part of fashion for many generations. Could you give me some background on that and like what they did, and also kind of maybe you were mentioning that you were as a young kid also looking at the business section and always looking at trends. Was that because of your family's background in it?
I was not interested in business because of my family. I don't know where that came from. My parents ultimately became not at all in anything sort of garment or really sort of classic corporate business related. My father was a chiropractor. My mom is a psychoanalyst. So not at all. But on both sides, grandparents, and on my mother's side, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents were in manufacturing. And from my father's side, this is really the side I think that inspires me the most, although both certainly have had a huge impact on my life, I realize now. My father's parents were Holocaust survivors. And my father was born in Germany at a displaced persons camp in 1946. And when they immigrated to the US, when my father was about 9, there were very little opportunities for my grandparents other than to work in clothing manufacturing in Brooklyn. So that's where they got their start. And that most certainly influenced my father, who then, even though, as I said, he ultimately became a chiropractor, like kinesiologist, holistic practitioner, before he became that professionally, he was deeply passionate about clothing and was until he passed. But he loved to always look at the seam, look to see how a garment is made. I mean, I would be a kid and he would like touch the fabric of my t-shirt and say like, oh, this is a great cotton, or this is like a poor cotton. How much did you spend on this? And it's funny, he worked at Barney's in menswear to sort of like pay his way through some of his training. From there, my father, I think because of his love for clothing and for clothing being made well, that really instilled in me the value that we should, buy well, make it last, treat our clothes well, and invest in things. And my mother felt the same way with her parents being in manufacturing and her grandparents and great-grandparents being in manufacturing. Those values very much came from both sides of my family. And then I think because my father also loved well-made clothes, he also loved objects. And we spent all of our time growing up going to flea markets and vintage stores and antiquing. That was like what we did. Like some kids like go to soccer. I probably could have benefited from that. I went antiquing. When I needed clothes, like when I was in high school, I'd be like, Dad, I've got to go shopping. Like I really need some like new clothes. I remember he once was like, great, let's go shopping. I was like, great. Wow. He said, yes. He took me to the vintage store and, got me like fine whale bell bottoms. And I'm like, at the time it wasn't.
Right. It wasn't on trend.
Right. I was like, can we just go to the Gap? Like, why are we doing this, Dad? This is so weird. Oh,
that's so amazing.
It's totally amazing.
And such a great value to instill in your children.
It's unbelievable. I mean, he was so rad. And I think about how much I value objects and the meaning behind them and why we buy what we buy, why we wear what we wear, why we hold on to what we keep. And I think that so much of that comes from this upbringing.
I think that that's so important, that buy quality, really take your time in deciding what you're going to invest in, and then keep it for a long time.
Yes. And understand what you're buying and the values. And I think because so many of my family members were also in manufacturing, I knew from a very young age that people were behind what we wear and what we buy. So understanding that behind a really poorly made shirt is a poorly paid laborer. That's a value that has certainly carried with me and that, you know, ultimately inspired some of my early days of fashion activism and that got me to shop Tomorrow's for sure.
The culture of fast fashion and all the workers that are you know, a part of needing to create that machine is really problematic for the future of the environment and just in everyone and people. So tell us about Shop Tomorrow's. It's a circular economy marketplace, right? Can you explain that for anyone who might not know what that is?
Of course. Shop Tomorrow's is a social re-commerce platform. So that means recom means resale, and social is their awesome social connection capabilities. And it's a platform for modern consumers to trade up goods across their neighborhoods, their networks, and beyond without exchanging cash. So the way that that really works is that members trade up their goods for credits and then redeem those credits on items that are sold from our community or from our strategic retail partners, or you can donate those credits to a family in need through our nonprofit partners. And that last portion that I just described is something that we're going to be rolling out this nonprofit arm, which is really important to us. It's very much based on the model of a circular economy in which you are selling your goods, you're putting them out there in order to use those outgrown things as currency for tomorrow's purchases. And the way that this works at a sort of nitty-gritty level is that one credit, which we call tokens, equals a dollar. And our first category, I should say, is kids' wear, because this is really the market that's just completely been abandoned by resale, by re-commerce. All the sites out there are not serving the sort of the parent market well, mostly because they're trading in dollars and there just isn't enough cash to be made in kids' wear. Kids' wear is just too low cost as a single item, but you need so much of it, which is why it becomes incredibly costly to clothe your kids. So that's why this is the first category that we're rolling out or that we launched with. What I was saying earlier is that we saw that there was a need for a better way to give and get things between our communities. Resale, selling on something like, let's say, a Facebook marketplace, right? Or a Depop. These are crowded spaces. They feel sometimes not quite trusted. There's not a lot of familiarity there. There's a lot of noise, a lot of chaos. What makes Shop Tomorrow so different is it's really three things. One is this credit-based model, which allows you to get full value and never lose any of the resale value to fees or commissions from, like, let's say, you know, from a shop or from a platform. The other is social connectivity. So as we scale, our social connectivity capabilities are going to be even more robust than they are now. Right now, you can already see the people who you know on the platform through like first and second degrees of separation, very much LinkedIn-like style. And those capabilities are going to be even more robust. We are going to be rolling out groups this summer so that you can just sort of like shop with your friends or shop with your like college networks, which is super, super cool. Then I just actually wanted to go back and explain why this token models and really what circular economy really means. So for example, with our first category being kids wear, let's use a kids wear garment. If you were to sell a kid's Patagonia vest that you spent good money on, right? You probably spent $70 on it. If you were to sell that at the consignment store, you would probably end up getting maybe $5 back for it at the end of the day, right? After they've taken their commissions and everything's gone on sale. And that $5 is not enough to buy you another kid's vest. Whereas on our site, if you had a Patagonia kids vest that you spent $70 on, maybe it's in great condition, it was barely worn. You know, let's say you want to get $60 for it, right? Let's say if you were going to have a tag sale, you're going to sell it for $60. So on our site, you're going to put it on the site for 60 tokens. When that sells, those 60 tokens are going to go directly into your digital wallet. Now you have 60 tokens, which is like $60 in site credit to go shopping with on our site. So you've maintained the full value and you can go and buy another vest that fits or 10 other things that you want for your kid. And it can all be done over time. So it's very much like a modern digital barter system. But instead of exchanging X for Y, you trade up X for tokens. You use those tokens to buy Y at any time that you want and they don't expire.
For parents and for that resale value, it sounds amazing. From your end, I can see, yeah, how this is in their benefit. Do you think it's working, I guess, in your benefit for your business model? And like, why go the token route instead of just having people sell for cash?
Well, selling for cash is already out there. But while it might be working for a very slim portion of the population, namely, really what it work who it works best for are the people, are the consumers who are able to do it almost like a job, right? The Poshmark seller can have total success if they're committed to this as their job. Whereas what we're doing here on Shop Tomorrow's, anybody can do it and make great value when they use the platform. And our ultimate goal, our ultimate mission is to be the backbone to this entire circular economy marketplace that uses our outgrown things as currency for tomorrow's purchases. So really unlocks the value of all the things that we have. My goal in life with this business is for all of us to stop sort of stashing our things in basements and attics and closets because we don't know what to do with them, and to get them up and out, to unlock their value, pass on to somebody else who can use it instead of letting it languish in the basement or trashing it. And therefore, we can all buy less, save more. It's great for our planet. It's great for our purses. It's a win-win.
I love that. And it really brings people together more. You know, it's not just that they're keeping everything in this one house and then passing it only on to, you know, their sister-in-law or, you know, their best friend, but it's opening up that, you know, nuclearness to a wider community, which is really exciting, and getting more people on board with just the ideology that supports this, that no, this is a really great way to act in the world.
Yes, that's exactly right. What we love seeing is that people on our platform are actually making connections with one another. And because at this stage, we are so focused on the parent market, people are finding one another to be resources in this parenting journey. And Shop Tomorrow's has become a resource. We are a resource for all things style and sustainability and this sort of like savvy parenting. And we love, you know, something that we sometimes see or we get, you know, told about is when people pass notes to one another, buyer, you know, seller to buyer. And we saw a little card that we love seeing this. A seller had written a note to say, you know, hope you enjoy this dress. My daughter celebrated her first birthday in it. So it means so much to me to pass this on. And that's what people are really joining for. It's that they're getting great value. They're getting to live their values. As parents, we need a village to support us. And Shop Tomorrow's can be that village. It is that community for so many people.
And it's a marketplace. It's starting with this one thing, but it has these reverberations that are larger.
I like the way you put that. Yeah.
As someone who doesn't have kids, you can't really participate. You really need to sell something first, get the tokens, and then be able to buy something. Like if I wanted to buy something for I'm going to have a nephew soon. Someone who doesn't have kids' clothes to sell cannot really be part of it.
I'm glad you asked. Thank you. You can absolutely participate. You do not have to sell in order to buy. You can buy. You can just buy. You know, we've got aunts and uncles and parents and grandparents on the site buying for the kiddos in their life. The way that it works is one additional step. You just buy the credits and then you can go ahead and check out.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's really super simple.
Okay. Yeah. That's great.
So go for it.
I will.
Absolutely. And then I was going to say the nice thing about actually transacting in that way is when you buy credits, you're buying them at a dollar a token, but it's all in a buy more, save more model. So you can get $25 in tokens for $20. And that right now, I mean, $25 in tokens can buy you Patagonia on the site right now. And then I should just also mention that there's a shipping fee if you choose to ship. But another nice thing about Shop Tomorrow's that differentiates us from anything else out there is that you can also change your settings. You can filter by location. So if you just wanted to shop locally, you can do that too and bypass those fees and like meet up and make a new friend.
And so how do you make money in the business?
So we make money on selling those tokens that I just mentioned. Then when you're transacting in tokens, there is a flat transaction fee of $4.99. So just like if you're ordering from Uber or like any of the zillions of service providers or apps that we have, there's generally a fee for use that's flat. Ours is $4.99. So whether you're buying one item from a seller or 10 items, it's just $4.99, which really incentivizes and encourages you to stock up, which works really well because generally we do see that a buyer really hooks on to a seller, right? Because the seller has everything that they want in the right size, season, and style.
So we know like fashion is one of the most environmentally destructive industries. And we've kind of started talking about that. You know, the manufacturing of it is one thing with all the processes that can be polluting, and then this consumption model of fast fashion, of buying and discarding. Both you and I are obviously participants in like buying small, you know, buying from small businesses and buying secondhand. Do you have any like tips on how to create a more sustainable closet or that anyone who's listening can use, or any like benchmarks that you use in your own home or any practices that you use? I mean, even looking around my living room, I can see like half of the stuff is either that I've had from my family, or some of it's new, some of it's bought firsthand, and then some of it is stuff that I've just bought from smaller businesses. That became, I think, really important to me in the last, like I would say 5 to 6 years. And you know, I'm probably from an older generation where, you know, I think Gen Zers and late millennials are just more attuned to like that as part of like what they grew up with. But yeah, any, I guess, tips on having a more sustainable closet?
Yes. First, I would say, just start with the principle of keep and buy what you love. What that means is I'm not a Marie Kondo practitioner. I'm not going to say everything has to spark joy. I'm not going to tell you to wipe your closet clean. Definitely not. If you saw my closet, it is not pristine in any way, shape, or form. And I've got tons of clothes in there that I wish I didn't have. So, you know, practice what you preach, right? So first I would say, clear out what you don't love. And the best way to do it really is to make it fun. I'm about to do a swap party with friends. Like, that is awesome. Now that we're sort of, you know, coming out of COVID and maybe we're feeling safer being around people, get a group of girlfriends together and give things to one another. Give and get things from and to one another. That's an awesome way. Donate. You know, if you're not going to sell, you know, you can certainly sell. Of course, there are platforms to sell your clothes on, sell them at a consignment store. If you're going to donate, donate responsibly. So learn about the nonprofit that you are donating to, understand the stats. We should all be aware of the fact that about 15% of the clothes that are donated in the United States, particularly to those sort of chain thrift stores, only about 15% of those clothes actually end up on bodies of people who need them. The rest of them are shipped overseas, you know, which is a very costly on the environment as well. And then it becomes landfill, or it's sort of broken down, becomes mattress stuffing and filler. And it also, in many ways, can perpetuate when we send our clothes, which are essentially like our landfill, right? The things that we don't no longer want in the US, when that's sent overseas to a developing country, it can really be detrimental to that country's progress and prosperity, because now they're relying on these secondhand or really thirdhand, fourthhand goods from overseas, and not developing their own manufacturing practices, which of course could bring, you know, employment and capital to the country. So donate responsibly, donate locally. Here where I live, I love to donate kids' clothes to a women's shelter and career clothes to Dress for Success. And these are national organizations, prom clothes, formal clothes to formal wear nonprofits that collect them. So first step is clean out your closet and clean it out responsibly and in a way that makes you feel really good. Next step, buy what you love. Buy something that you're going to cherish. Buy for longevity. Know the fabrics that you're wearing. If it feels good, it's probably made well. If it feels like it's going to fall apart, then the people who are making it are probably also falling apart in some ways. And buy less, choose well. And we always like to say, you know, share more. I started Shop Tomorrows in many, many ways because I was always the one sharing with my friends. When I no longer wanted something, I would give it away. And I was also never reluctant to say, hey guys, you know, I've got this party that I'm going to, or I've got, you know, a black tie event. Anybody have something, you know, like, can I borrow something? Right. And maybe that wasn't always like so cool, but luckily I think because I was sort of a fashion stylist, a costume designer, like, you know, my friends like loved it when I would ask, but use what is already in the ecosystem around us, whether that's our friend group, our networks, our neighborhoods, everything that we need is really right here between us. We just have to get it all up and out. So those are a few of my tips.
I had two friends that both lived in Williamsburg when I lived in Williamsburg, and it was so great to be able to share clothes with them. They both moved to LA, unfortunately, but yeah, it was like always like, oh, okay, you had three closets instead of one. And yeah, you all of a sudden didn't need as much as you thought you did, or you just like got surprise stuff, which is always exciting.
I love that. I love the idea. Like you said, you know, you had three closets and not one. That's beautiful. You know, with the way that we look at Shop Tomorrow, sometimes we don't call it shopping. We call it closet hopping, right? You get to like closet hop thousands of closets all around the country, thousands of kids' closets all around the country.
I'm excited for your groups. I think that'll be a fun thing to do with friends. So let's talk about being a founder. You're a woman founder. You are the CEO of your company. We always see female founders kind of put up on this pedestal where there's a lot of, it seems like you're doing it all, but it can be really difficult and challenging to kind of like keep up that image. Maybe you can talk about your experience a little bit of being in that position.
There is definitely the standard that I certainly feel the pressure to fulfill of almost like the female founder unicorn, right? Which means not enough for the company to have the potential to be a unicorn, but the founder herself also needs to be the unicorn. So she needs to have an incredible company and run it in an incredible way, of course, but also be an incredible, potentially, you know, mother, wife, partner, tremendously successful in all areas, right? She needs to be very well-rounded and well-rested and prioritize her well-being, right? Like fitness and diet. And of course, aesthetically, you know, there is also the pressure to fulfill a very sort of stereotypical female founder image. And I like to speak about this because it's entirely an unreasonable expectation. It is definitely placed on us. I feel it in a million ways. You know, sometimes it's a bit more under the surface and other times it is a bit more blatant. You know, somebody who, you know, wants to be supportive, maybe part of our sort of investor world, you know, might say, you know, there's so many speaker series out right now. You should be on these panels, right? It's like, great, let's focus on running the business, right? Or when we speak about being mothers and entrepreneurs, whenever I'm asked the question of, you know, how do you do it? How do you do it all? I like to be very upfront. Childcare and a tremendously involved husband who is really my partner. I mean, childhood responsibilities or childcare responsibilities are split 50-50 with my husband. He's tremendously supportive of Shop Tomorrows and of my building this business. Full-time childcare and tremendous sacrifices. I don't eat very well. I might appear to be, you know, somewhat healthy or fit, but I certainly don't feel it. I haven't worked out in forever. And I'd like to. Every day I would like to. And I find it hard to find the time. So I just want to be really upfront about that. The only way that I sort of take care of myself is I just like drink a ton of water. And that's basically the best thing that I can do for myself. And I try to get 6 hours of sleep every night.
Yeah, it is this impossible standard. It's just like the image of all the things that you, as a woman who's successful, should be the shoulds. We need the support to be able to do it, to quote, do it all, right? Without it, it's just not going to work.
And I think that what I've really loved about being a founder is, you know, actually, I would say particularly during, while we've been in COVID and while our worlds have gone digital, I'm a part of multiple sort of female founder and women in tech groups that have really been so instrumental and supportive during this time. And it's very helpful to all be able to speak to one another about things just like this in a very vulnerable and candid way. We all have days when we didn't get it over the fence, right? Like this morning, we launched a couple of new pages on our site. Every single day, I've been telling myself for the last 3 weeks that tomorrow is the day that we launch this. You know, and every day going to bed thinking, oh gosh, I can't believe we didn't get that over the fence today. Because you don't read the stories in which it took an additional month or an additional 6 months or 2 years to launch a product. You just read about when it launches, right? So the more transparency and openness we can have in these dialogues about how long success and scaling takes or how hard it is in our personal lives, the more we can have those conversations, the better we can all sort of feel and sleep at night.
And to give yourself grace, right? For yes. like not doing it that one day and having it be, you know, 3 weeks out, that's okay.
Yes.
I totally agree with the transparency. It's so the perfect, you know, Instagram image of only telling about when you launched and not about all the other stuff, you know?
Like, right, right. Nobody Instagrams the pilots, the failed MVPs, the crashing prototypes. That's not on Instagram.
I'm seeing it now in some of these online groups that are just becoming more vulnerable, talking about, you know, all the things like the childcare and the multiple assistants that they have and the, you know, the things that, you know, this kind of like little army that takes to support, you know, a thriving business.
And let's also just be clear, right? It takes resources to be able to have that.
Yes.
And I understand that I'm in a position where I am eternally grateful for the support that my family, our sort of extended family, has provided for us in that, you know, I mean, again, to be transparent, my mother-in-law helps pay for our childcare. And without that, I would not be able to sit here and have this conversation with you while my daughter is home, you know, sick from school with my nanny and my other son is in preschool. I wouldn't be able to be having this conversation with you if I didn't have the means to support paying for childcare.
Thank you for sharing that. And that's a huge part of just like each of us recognizing our own privileges and what that, you know, kind of what that means.
And also, you know, I also think recognizing that there are so many founders out there who don't have those resources. And I'm grateful that there are many investors and accelerators and programs and incubators right now that are emerging specifically to support underrepresented or under-resourced founders. That's a really positive thing to see come out of this space in the last few years.
Do you want to share any of those ones? Do you know any of them?
Oh, sure. I think about Lolita Taub and the Community Fund. I think of Harlan Capital and what Arlen has built. There are a number of accelerators that are out there. There's just more and more every day. And then there are some that are specifically for female founders too, because historically, female founders only get about 2% of the VC capital that's out there. There are funds like Female Founders Fund and Chloe Capital and I mean, so many others that are investing in female founders.
Well, I'll include some of those in the show notes as well. I want to go to our lightning round.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah. What is your favorite vintage store in NYC?
Oh my goodness. Used to be Alice's Underground, which definitely does not exist anymore.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, I don't know that.
No. And then everything in the East Village on 9th Street, L Train in Brooklyn. Those have got to be some of my favorites.
Who or what are you learning from right now?
There's a book called Backable by Sunil Patel that is incredibly helpful. And Play Bigger is another book that I'm reading right now about building companies that are first to market, that are revolutionary, right? Like a circular economy marketplace.
What's something not a lot of people know about you?
Maybe a lot of people don't quite know that I didn't expect to be an entrepreneur, that I expected to be a costume designer and stylist forever. I didn't quite expect to be a mother. I did not expect this life. We plan and God laughs, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
What's it? One adventure still on your bucket list?
They are all on my bucket list. These days, I'm just excited when I get to go into Manhattan for a business meeting, like yesterday, because I'm currently speaking to you from Connecticut.
What advice would you give a young person entering their career?
You have to go after what you love with the tenacity and force of an elephant breaking through a wall. Just do everything that you can to live your full potential and to speak to a zillion people. I know this is not very lightning-like style, but I'm going to go for it anyway. Don't be afraid to share your ideas. Nobody is going to steal them. The only way that you can get ahead and build a business is if you talk to every single person who has two ears.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. It's so nice to be speaking with you, Michelle. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Art of the App. If you liked the episode, please share it with a friend and consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. This helps more people just like you find the show. You can connect with me on my website at michellecharing.com or Instagram. The link for both is in the show notes. See you next week.